Let me first off mention my collaborators on various stages of this project, Janusz Grabowski from Warsaw and Hendrik Grundling from University of New South Wales, and Angus Hurst from Adelaide. And the talking I'm going to be talking about today is started, I guess, as do many things, but was something that Alan and Jerry did. In particular, I first learned about this in Alan's CBMS notes from Chapel Hill in was that 77? It was the first time I heard about this Groenewald Van Hove theorem, obstructions to quantization. And then, of course, there was a discussion of that that appeared in the second issue of Foundations. And so I read all that stuff, and I got really interested in it, and thought about it a lot, but I couldn't really do much with it. And then I met Grundling and Hurst in Australia, and we started flailing away at this, and it took a fair amount of time to get going, but we got some examples and we got some insight. And then I wanted to mention a paper by Richard and Victor Ginsburg, which really sort of popped a cork on this thing. And once we saw that, we sort of knew what to do. Let me mention that all the references I'm going to be throwing up here can be downloaded off my website. So there it is. I can put that up again later. Or actually, I guess I can leave it there and go over to this one. So, I start off in the usual way with a symplectic manifold and a Poisson bracket. And I'm going to be looking at the Poisson algebra of smooth functions, and what I want to do is to quantize this in some sense. Now, of course, everybody knows that there are endless problems with this. You see, even in first-year quantum mechanics text, that there are factor-ordering ambiguities, there are problems going from rectangular to polar coordinates, and so forth. And so you encounter these things, and you begin to wonder, well, you know, can you get around these problems? How serious are they really? And, of course, there were a lot of developments in an effort, at least from the physical point of view, to get away from these things, like, for example, geometric quantization theory. So people like Bert and Yendre and Alan spent a lot of time solving these problems to some extent. But then there's this the stunning result of, it goes back to Groenewald in 46 and Van Hove in 51, which says essentially that you cannot quantize all the polynomials on R2n, flat face base R2n, in a consistent way. So I want to show how that goes and discuss generalizations of that. So my program is what to quantize, first off, and in view of this, we can't quantize everything, so what can we get away with quantizing? And then, naturally enough, this led us a little bit into the question of exactly what is quantization, in the sense of being very specific as to what conditions one wants to put on. And, of course, there are other questions about how to go about quantizing, what techniques to use. I don't want to discuss that at all, or issues involving classification. And throughout, I'll concentrate on the standard Hilbert space-based quantization approach. So, what to quantize first off is what I call a basic algebra of observables. And what this is going to be is a Lie subalgebra of the smooth functions on your phase space, which satisfy these conditions. And the first one here says that B is finitely generated, so it needn't be finite dimensional, but almost always in practice, I'll take it to be finite dimensional. You want the Hamiltonian vector fields of your basic set of observables here to be complete. And you want the set to be transitive and separating, which means roughly that it sort of defines your phase space in an appropriate sense. Finally, I want this basic algebra to be minimal in this regard. Okay, so we're really cutting down to what's essential here. And in physical applications, it's usually fairly clear what you want your basic algebra to be. Here are some examples. If your phase space is R2N, you want to be looking at the Heisenberg algebra, so the Q's, the P's, and 1. If you're talking about a particle with spin, you would want to take the phase space to be S2. The basic algebra would be SU2, and that's generated by the components of your spin vector. For a particle, say, moving around a circle, the appropriate algebra would be the Euclidean algebra, consisting of the angular momentum and cosine and sine of your angle. Somewhat exotic but interesting example is the two torus, in which case I take the basic algebra to be T, which is the trigonometric polynomials of mean zero, these guys right here. In all these cases, of course, the basic algebras are finite dimensional. Here it's infinite dimensional. In fact, there are no finite dimensional basic algebras on a torus. So those are just some examples of basic algebras. And quantization. Okay, so what I want to do is I pick a basic algebra, and then I pick some Lie subalgebra of observables that contains that basic algebra, and call that thing O. And so what I want to do is I want to quantize this pair consisting of these two things. And so this is going to be a Lie representation of this algebra O by symmetric operators and some Hilbert space, the usual things, such that I have a bunch of conditions. The first just is actually redundant here, but I want to emphasize that I want quantization to be a homomorphism from my algebra O onto the algebra of symmetric operators. Right, that's standard. The really three key things here are that I want Q, when restricted to the basic algebra, to be irreducible. I want it to be integrable in the sense that what I'm generating here, when restricted to my basic algebra, I've got a Lie algebra representation. I actually want that to integrate up to a Lie group representation. And then I want Q also to represent this algebra faithfully, because this is supposed to be a basic algebra in some sense. They're fundamental physical observables. If I quantize 1 to 0, then that's saying that they're not really fundamental after all. Okay, and for the most part, I am concerned with the case when the set of algebra observables to be quantized is the polynomial algebra generated by my basic algebra. So you just build all polynomials in this guy. And you have to be a little bit careful because this is not necessarily freely generated. But let me mention that it turns out that if you look at the conditions here for basic algebra, that this is actually a special version of Suryo's notion of an elementary system. And in fact, what it means is that if I have a symplectic manifold with a basic algebra on it, then in fact that symplectic manifold must be a coadjoint orbit for the corresponding group. So these things are actually orbits. As long as I'm in the finite dimensional case, again, the two torus here is not a is not an orbit. Okay, I will, in that context then, P of B here is just the coordinate ring of your coadjoint orbit in the sense of algebraic geometry. Okay, a little piece of notation right here. Let me, P with a K on top means polynomials of degree at most K, and when it makes sense, the lower K means polynomials of degree exactly equal to K. Okay, now, here's the first key result. For now, it's all over to reals. Okay, but it will go over to the complexes after a while. Okay, so the key theorem, due to Groenewald and Van Hove, says that in the case of R to N, there does not exist a quantization of all polynomials in such a way with the basic algebra being the Heisenberg algebra. Okay, you cannot do this. And here is the proof as presented in Foundations. What you do is you let me work in the case N equals 1 for simplicity. Okay, so in this instance, the Stone-von-Neumann theorem and irreducibility say that your Hilbert space has got to be L2 of R up to equivalence, and furthermore, it says that you have to have the Schrodinger representation of P and Q here. And then you appeal to the spectral theorem and integrability, and then you show that if you look at what Q squared quantizes to, it turns out to be just a quantization of Q squared. Likewise for P, and then here you have the anti-commutator. And so given these results and a little bit more work, you get a rule for how every observable should be quantized, every polynomial should be quantized. Okay, these things are, we refer to them as von Neumann rules. Okay, now, here's what happens. You take this classical identity, okay, so this is just a Poisson bracket identity right here, and you take this thing and you quantize it using the Poisson bracket goes over to commutator rule plus these von Neumann rules up here. Okay, so it's just a little computation. So you go ahead and do that, and when you do it on the left-hand side, you get that. Okay, after a little bit of cleaning up, and when you do the same thing on the right-hand side, you get that. And it's this little 2 versus 1 right here that's the contradiction. Okay, so the moral of the story is that if we insist that quantization be a Lie homomorphism, that we are not going to be able to quantize all polynomials. Of course, you can quantize certain subalgebras, provided they're not too big. So, for example, the inhomogeneous symplectic algebra you can quantize. You can quantize all polynomials which are at most affine in the momentum, but generally nothing bigger. So that's the their famous theorem. And so the question was, of course, this example is very special. We have, for instance, the Stone-von-Neumann theorem, which is not going to apply under other circumstances. The phase space is a cotangent bundle. What happens if we look at more general circumstances? Well, this is what Gründling and Hurst and I started to do back around 95 or so. And the first example we looked at was a particle with spin, okay, and with basic algebra SU2. And we proved the Groenewald-Van Hove theorem in that instance. So you cannot quantize the entire Poisson algebra of polynomials on S2. In other words, all spherical harmonics in this instance, you can't do it. In fact, we proved that the largest subalgebra that you can consistently quantize is just the U2 subalgebra. So in other words, SU2 plus 1. Anything bigger than that, and you run into trouble. And then we looked at the cylinder, and same sort of result, and as well SL2R, and again, the same sort of result. All of these here are sort of computation-based. We tried to prove it much the same way that Groenewald came up with his original result. You find an identity, you quantize it, and hopefully something will go wrong. Okay. But that takes a lot of work. And in these cases, we also came up with the largest, we classified the largest quantizable subalgebras. And that turned out to be tough to do in these cases. I still don't know an efficient way to do that. It's very case-by-case dependent. Right. So like in this one's kind of a little bit complicated, but here the largest one you can get away with is simply you take your components with a spin vector and throw in one, and that's as big as it gets. Okay. On the other hand, it turns out that if you look at the torus, that there exists here, a non-trivial quantization, not of just the polynomials on the torus, but all of C infinity of T2. Okay, and you can explicitly write down what it is. Okay, so there's no obstruction to quantization in this case as opposed to all these. And the basic reason here seems to be that the basic algebra is infinite dimensional. And so somehow the irreducibility requirement that you put on as part of quantization loses a lot of its force. It doesn't do anything for you, and that's where sort of the obstructions are coming from here. Okay, but here you can, it turns out that it's actually, this quantization is actually a Coston-Suriot pre-quantization, which is at the same time a quantization. It's very interesting. It's kind of peculiar, but nonetheless, there it is, a complete full quantization. All right, let's see. Okay. So, we're doing a lot of stuff by hand, and after a while, of course, that gets a little tedious. And so we wanted to say, well, can we actually prove some theorems? And here's where Richard and Victor's paper came in, because what happened is I got a copy of this paper, and Grabowski got a copy of this paper, and we both read it with great interest, and it spurred him to produce a little result, and it spurred me to produce a little result. And when we got together, we put these two little results together, and it gave us a theorem. It was really cool the way it worked out. So anyhow, we got a bunch of theorems now. So here's the question. You've got a symplectic manifold with a basic algebra B, and you want to quantize the coordinate ring of that thing. And here's what we have. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to break this thing up into four cases depending upon whether my representations are finite or infinite dimensional and whether the phase space is compact or non-compact. And here is what you get in three out of four cases, the issue is completely settled. There are no quantizations for finite dimensional representations. There is always an obstruction, compact or non-compact. Okay. In the infinite dimensional case, there's an obstruction to quantizing compact symplectic manifolds. And from a physical point of view, that sort of makes sense because you expect a quantization of a compact symplectic manifold to lead you to a finite dimensional quantization. Okay, and but in any case, we can show that there are obstructions in all these three cases. The fourth case, of course, the infinite dimensional representations for non-compact phase spaces is the most grueling one. And what we're going... The plan here is to attack it from the ends going towards the middle. So look at the case when the basic algebra is nilpotent to begin with, and then solvable and onwards like this, and then start at the other end with semi-simple and go like that. And bit by bit, we begin to... This is infinite dimensional. I have this big caveat up top that for these theorems, B must be finite dimensional. So this one's really this doesn't fit into our pattern. And I think when you have infinite dimensional basic algebras, well, anything can happen. You know, so this is the only time I've actually even thought about it. It's just... Okay. So Grabowski and I then started with the nilpotent case, and we got a no-go theorem. Okay, so this now holds for any nilpotent basic algebra, not just Heisenberg. And so this is a sort of a high-powered generalization of the classical Grunewald-Van Hove theorems. And then you can ask, well, if you can't quantize nilpotent algebras, what about solvable algebras? And it turns out that as soon as you cross the threshold from nilpotent to solvable, you've got problems, because technically I suppose this means that you've got problems. So here you don't have problems. And here's an example. This is the simplest solvable algebra, which is not nilpotent. I take my phase space to be the cotangent bundle of the half line, and I take my basic algebra to be the affine algebra generated like this. And I can generate a polynomial quantization, or I should say a quantization of the polynomials here as follows. Here you just write it down and check that it works. And here it is. There's the Hilbert space, with measure being dq over q, and this is just your basic representation of the affine algebra right here. And then for higher order polynomials in the affine algebra, right, so polynomials in these three objects right here, I just define that. Okay, so it doesn't necessarily make any sense. It's just what it is, but it works. Okay, so I can consistently quantize every polynomial. So, I should immediately mention that this is not true in general for solvable algebras, because the Euclidean algebra is solvable on T star at a circle, and in that case there is an obstruction. Well, it's connected with that, but don't take my punchline. Okay. It's not quite that, but okay. So let me go over to the semi-simple case now. So I'm coming in from the other end, and I mentioned this before, and one of the things you have to be a little bit careful about here is that while every symplectic manifold with a basic algebra is a coadjoint orbit, the converse is not necessarily true. And so even for SL2, the nilpotent orbits are okay, and the one semi-simple orbit, the hyperboloid of one sheet, is okay. But these two guys, if you just think of those as symplectic manifolds, with the basic algebra being SL2, well, with SL2 is not a basic algebra for those things. Okay, what happens is that you don't separate points with the SL2 generators on the hyperboloids of two sheets. So you have to be, so this is, it's, as I mentioned, it's a little more general than Suryo's notion of a, a little more specific than Suryo's notion of an elementary system. And what I claim is that as long as I look at an orbit, a coadjoint orbit, for B being semi-simple here, as long as B is actually restricts to a basic algebra on that orbit, so it's a basic orbit, as long as this thing is not nilpotent, then there exists no polynomial quantizations of its coordinate ring. So this is the theorem. So sort of now what's happening in the looking at non-compact Lie algebras, what's happening is that at the nilpotent end you have obstructions, and at the semi-simple end you have obstructions, but sort of as you go towards the middle, the obstructions go away, or may go away. Okay. So Alan just told me to dispense with the proof. So if anybody wants to see it, let me just mention about the proof is that it's completely different than what I showed you from the Grunewald-Van Hove standard example. The proof relies upon technical facts about the coordinate rings of co-adjoint orbits of semi-simple algebras and a lot of algebraic stuff about finite codimensional ideals, really technical algebraic stuff. The proof is it's very algebraic, and a lot of that stuff is due to Grabowski, who loves that. But it's really pretty, but it's not at all computational. And I should also mention that the various cases, like where we prove the existence of obstructions, like for nilpotent algebras or for compact basic algebras, whenever we got a general proof, they're all different. Going from one to the other, there's sort of no commonality. You know, you say, okay, I know how it works here. How should the proof go over here? It just doesn't work that way. They require entirely different algebraic sort of facts. It's just a very interesting thing. But that means every time we look at a new class of examples, we essentially have to start over. Let me mention. Some problems and the conjecture as to what I think is going on. Okay, so the cases that work, and it turns out here I said non-nilpotent, is because if you have a nilpotent algebra, you can actually generate a quantization. Okay, so there's something about, nilpotent orbit in a semi-simple algebra, okay? In that case, there is no obstruction. It's only when you look at the non-nilpotent orbits that you have the obstructions. And so if you look at the cases for finite dimensional algebras, they have to be basic, first off, and the only nilpotent orbits I know that are basic for sure are the maximal ones. That's why I was quizzing you about the minimal guys. Proving that, René Berlinski gave me a proof that every maximal coadjoint orbit is basic, but non-maximal ones need not be basic. Doesn't matter. Any maximal one. Okay, but as soon as you drop down to smaller dimensional ones, they don't have to be. So I kind of doubt in general that the minimal ones would be. So, both these examples work, and because they're ideals, again in the algebraic sense, as being varieties in the the dual of the Lie algebra, they're both, the ideals are homogeneous. And as long as I have an homogeneous ideal, I can generate a quantization. Okay, it may not be a real interesting one, depending on how clever I am, but I can always generate one, as long as the ideal is homogeneous. And in all examples so far where the ideal is not homogeneous, okay, so for example, in the case of this orbit right here, the ideal is not homogeneous because there's a non-zero Casimir, I get an obstruction. And if you look down the list of the cases where obstructions appear, in every instance, the ideals are inhomogeneous. So this seems to be the conjecture, although I still, in general, don't have any idea how to prove that. Okay, so let me end there.